Thank you. Thank you very much. So if this thing beeps like that again, Father, I'll know what that means. It must mean to cut it off, right? But I'm really honored to be here today. I want to thank all of you for having me and Governor for inviting me. I'm so honored that you would have me. You know, I'm still new enough in politics to be amazed that people so far from Florida even care what I have to say. So it's real touching to be here. I'm glad to be back in this part of the country. You may not know this, but I was here in this part of the country earlier in my life. In 1989 and 1990, I came to a small school in Northwest Missouri called Tarkio College. It's no longer around. It's not my fault. They're not. People ask. Okay, maybe someone's not happy that Tarkio College is not around, but. People ask me all the time, well, why did you go to Tarkio College? What brought you to Northwest Missouri? It was the only school in America that would allow me to play football. And, don't laugh. You may not know this, but I would have been in the National Football League had it not been for my lack of size, speed, and talent. So, anyway, I'm glad to be here for the second anniversary of your 65th birthday? So. It's great to be here for it. And look, let's just address right up front the elephant in the room, because anytime anyone makes a trip to Iowa, people start speculating about what you're going to do in the future and all that. So let me just be blunt. I am not now, nor will I ever be, a candidate for offensive coordinator of Iowa. I know there's rumors, but it's... yeah. I know there's rumors, but that's not... So what I thought I'd do in the few minutes I have with you is kind of share my impressions in the aftermath of this election. I've heard a lot of people that are a little bit discouraged by it. I certainly had the pleasure, the honor, and the privilege of traveling this country on behalf of Governor Mitt Romney, who I can tell you, for those of you who have not met him, is an extraordinary person, an extraordinary human being. I believe would have been a phenomenal president, and we wish him all the best and hope that his voice stays involved in the American political process. But we're having this conversation now, for those of us who believe in limited government conservatism, which my guess is a lot of you, about what it's all about, what the future's about for us, and where we stand. So let me begin by saying this is not about the Republican Party, for those of us who are Republicans. This is about limited government conservatism. The Republican Party's the home of that movement, but that's really what's in debate here, about what its meaning is in this new century. And let's be clear that limited government conservatism has never been decided by presidential elections. In fact, where you can find the true meaning of limited government conservatism is in states like this, where governors like yours are applying tried and true principles to the modern problems of the 21st century. And as I said on the way into some press that was asking me, if America had a 5.1% unemployment rate, we would all be very, very happy, as you should be with your governor and with the work that your lieutenant governor, your governor, and your legislature are doing here. You deserve to be congratulated for that. Now, for those of us in federal office, the question is, well, how do you apply the principles of limited government and free enterprise to the problems of the 21st century? That is the fundamental question that we face. And that's what we need to be focused on now and moving forward. Now, let's first define what the problem is. And the problem that we're facing as a country, now I gather this from traveling a lot over the last 6 months and talking to a lot of people across this country. And I gather this from talking to a lot of people in my home state of Florida. You can pick up a lot of good insight in the checkout line at your grocery store, picking your kids up from school, and traveling across the country as well as I've had the opportunity to do. And here's the fundamental problem that I have sensed, and I think you know. Our economy has stagnated, particularly for the middle class. The fact is that today workers are not making as much as they once made in jobs like that 10, 15, 25 years ago. I think of the jobs my parents had. My father was a bartender at events like this. My mother was a maid at hotels and a cashier and a stock clerk. And they were able to provide for us a standard of living, not rich by any means. We never had everything we wanted. We only had everything we needed. And my parents were able to provide us that standard of living with those jobs. It's very difficult to do that nowadays. The fact is that our middle class has stopped growing. And in fact, wages in the middle class have stopped growing as well. Private health insurance is harder to find. You know, today there's 45 million Americans that have no health insurance coverage, and healthcare costs are taking a bigger bite out of their monthly paycheck. So By the way, this issue of our middle class being under assault and feeling threatened, this is not just an economic problem. This is a problem that goes to the core of what America is. And here's what I mean by that. Every country in the world has rich people. And unfortunately, every country in the world has poor people. But one of the things that made America exceptional is a vibrant middle class that anyone could aspire to be a part of, no matter where you started out in life, no matter where you came from, no matter what the circumstances of your birth. The great promise of America is that everyone would have the opportunity, if they worked hard, played by the rules, to go as far as their talent and their work ethic would take them. And so this goes to the core of who we are as a people and as a nation. It's one of the few things that sets us apart from the rest of the world. And when we talk about the middle class in America, we are talking about the essence of who we are as a nation and as a people. Now, before you can solve any problem, you have to know what the causes of it are. And there are two main causes of what's happening today to middle class Americans. The first is that our economy isn't growing fast enough. It's not creating middle class jobs. It's not creating the jobs that pay people enough money so they can have the kind of life and give their kids the kind of opportunities that my parents gave me and your parents gave you. And the second problem, unfortunately, is that too many of our people don't have the skills to take advantage of the jobs that are being created. I haven't had a chance to talk to the governor about this, but I know, but I've heard from others in the state that this is a state with low unemployment and jobs are being created, and they struggle sometimes to fill some positions because people don't have the skills to do the jobs that are being created that do pay the middle class type wages. The economy isn't growing for a number of reasons. Globalization is real. It has changed the way the economy functions. It has moved jobs overseas that were once here. But the other reality is automation is real. My wife, when we were still dating and about to get married, and even in the first year of our marriage, she was a bank teller. There aren't that many bank tellers anymore. You can deposit your check by taking a picture on your phone. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? It is what it is. And we're dealing with that as well. But there's another cause why our economy isn't growing. And that is that at the federal level, we do not have what you have here at the state level. And that is stable political leadership. A political leadership that understands that your governments that spend more money than they take in run into trouble really fast. That understand you have to generate revenue for government through taxes, but if the tax rates are too high, it discourages people from investing. And if the tax rates are unpredictable, it scares them completely away. A leadership that understands, of course, we have regulations. You want your water to be drinkable, your air to be breathable. You want rules that people have to follow. But if your rules are not a part of a cost-benefit analysis, in essence, if you're not weighing the cost of the regulation with the impact, positive or negative, that it's going to have, you're going to have some pretty bad regulations. We don't have any of that. Government has contributed to this climate of poor growth. You look at this fiscal cliff. I don't know if any of you guys have heard about this. You know who made that? Congress made that. The idea that we should have these enormous tax increases at the same time as we have these dramatic cuts in spending, at the same exact time that all these taxes expire, at the same exact moment that the spending goes down in a dramatic fashion and uncontrolled way, that wasn't an accident. Congress chose that. The fiscal cliff is a complete creation of the political branch in Washington, D.C. And it's an example, once more, of a dysfunctional process that threatens our economy and millions of people across our economy. What about the uncertainty out there, what the tax regulations are going to be, what the taxes are going to be, what regulations are going to be, about energy policy, about the national debt? We owe $16 trillion. There's no plan in place to deal with it. All of that uncertainty discourages people from investing their money in America. Because that's how the economy grows. When someone that has access to money decides to take it out of the bank, and instead of buying bars of gold, they decide to use it to invest in the economy and open up a new business. And people are afraid to do that in a country with a $16 trillion debt and no plan to fix it, taxes they can't predict, regulations they can't plan for, and an energy policy that disincentivizes manufacturing and the growth of other industries in the United States. The second part of the problem we talked about is our people sometimes don't have the skills they need. And I want to be blunt about that. It all begins with societal breakdown. We have very significant societal problems in America today. The breakdown of the American family has a direct impact on our economic well-being. I often hear people talk about the social conservative and fiscal conservative. The social and moral well-being of your people is directly linked to their economic well-being. You cannot separate the two. And the fact of the matter is that it is startling to see what an enormous advantage in life it is when a child is raised in a stable home by two parents. It is the greatest gift my parents ever gave me. Was a not a big house, not even a college savings account. They couldn't afford that. But they gave me a valuable thing. They gave all my siblings a valuable thing, which was an enormous head start in life. And that is, I was raised in a strong and stable home where my parents loved each other and lived together and raised us and made us feel loved and secured and encouraged to dream. Now, sadly, there are a lot of kids that don't find themselves in that circumstance. And let me be clear, there are some heroic single parents out there, but they would be the first ones to tell you how difficult it is. Of course, it extends beyond that. Millions of children this every year are born out of wedlock in this country. Millions of kids that are growing up in dangerous neighborhoods and substandard housing, no access to health care, from a broken family where maybe their grandmother's raising them because they never met their father, and their mom is working two jobs to make ends meet. These kids are starting out life with five or six strikes against them. It's going to be difficult for them to get ahead unless someone does something. These are the facts of societal breakdown, and they manifest themselves in our economy. And as a society, we need to understand that. There are other issues, and you're dealing with them in the state. We need a 21st century curriculum. We have to educate our kids to have the skills to do the jobs of the 21st century. We need to do a better job at adult education. There are plenty of people I've met, and you've met them too. They're in their late 20s or early 30s. Maybe they made the mistake when they were younger of not going to school, but now they regret it and they want to change their lives. We've got to figure out a way to get them back into programs where they can acquire skills in a trade or in a career. My sister did that. In her mid-30s, raising her two boys by herself, she was able to go back to school and get her degree in an education and a master's in special education and changed her life completely. We have to do that for more people. Of course, the college costs are significant. Not just going to school like I did here in Northwest Missouri. I transferred back after a year to the University of Florida and then law school. I graduated with exorbitant student debt. Someone named Sally May kept taking $700 out of my account every month. And it was in some months, and you hear others say that when you added up all my student loans, I spent more on my student loans than I did on any other expense. So I knew that going in, but we have to do something about that as well. We have too many kids that are graduating school with enormous debt load, and when they go in, they don't even know it. They have no idea how much it's going to cost to pay it back. And they're studying for careers that will never pay them the money they need to pay it back. They at least deserve the right to know that going in. So now I've given you all the problems, but what are the solutions? Let me tell you where we start. We start with a very simple notion. The way to turn our economy around is not by making rich people poorer. It's by making poor people richer. That's the way you move our country forward. And it starts, number one, with economic growth. What can government do at the federal level to get the economy growing again? Well, look to your governor here in Iowa. How about balancing your budget and dealing with your debt so that you don't have one? How about tax rates that generate the revenue government needs but are not so high or so unpredictable that people are afraid to invest in your economy moving forward? How about a regulatory process that takes into account the costs of the regulation, not just the theoretical benefits of those regulations? How about an investment in energy policy, not just energy politics? The United States of America is now the most energy-rich country in the world with a wide portfolio of energy resources, including energy resources that you're pioneering here. Now, that's not just good in terms of creating jobs, because it does. And that's not just good because of the fact that it allows us to be independent, because it does. It allows American manufacturing to be competitive again. We've been losing all these jobs for decades because labor costs were lower overseas. If we could lower energy costs in America, all of a sudden, all kinds of American manufacturing is viable again. And you know what manufacturing jobs are? They're middle-class jobs that allow people to raise their families, to buy a house, to take a vacation, and to send their kids to college or to get ahead in life. If we had a viable energy policy, we would be so much further ahead in our economic growth. We have to deal with health care. We do have a health insurance problem in America, absolutely. But a big government solution is not the answer. What we need is to figure out a way to empower people to have access to a vibrant private market where they can buy the insurance they need at a price they can afford from any company in America that will sell it to them. We need federal policies that encourage that, as well as tort reform that's driving up the cost of health care all across America. We need sound monetary policy. There's not enough talked about that. But the Federal Reserve, its role should be to have stable currency, not to intervene in the economy artificially, creating even more uncertainty. There's all kinds of other things. You know agriculture is important. You realize the opportunity for American agriculture? There are millions of people around the world emerging into the middle class. You know what that means around the world when they emerge into the middle class? They buy more stuff, including food. And many of the countries that they live in cannot produce the food that they want to consume. That's where we come in. That's where American manufacturing has the opportunity for an extraordinary 21st century renaissance. And clearly, Iowa is a state that understands that. How about free but fair trade? We need to find more markets that buy the stuff we build and we sell. And the good news is that there are millions of people out there that can afford to buy it now. And of course, I think that we need to modernize our legal immigration system. Now, let me tell you about our immigration system. This is the most generous country in the world when it comes to immigrants. 1 million people a year immigrate here legally. 1 million. No other country comes close to that figure. But the system needs to be modernized. It needs to take into account the opportunities that it creates for investors or for jobs. And also, our visa process for tourism needs to be improved as well. Because tourism, now that you have a middle class emergency from around, emerging from around the country, can leave millions of dollars in places all across this country. A little selfish being from Florida, I imagine. We have a couple places in Central Florida you may have heard of. One has a mouse. But I think all across the country we have the opportunity for business exchange as well. These are the elements, and there are other things that government can do. And they're being pioneered at the state levels. But the second part of it that we have to do is prepare our people. And that starts with what I believe is the family structure. We have to be clear with people that there are consequences to societal breakdown. And our government cannot do anything to undermine those institutions in society that have always been the ones that help strengthen our families. We must do everything to account that we ensure that federal policy doesn't allow that to happen. We need a 21st century education system. I believe in early childhood education. I believe in 21st century curriculums that teach the kids what they need to learn and succeed in the 21st century. Your lieutenant governor is a leader in STEM education. We need more of that because that's where the world is going, to a knowledge-based economy that we're struggling to compete in. We're preparing our kids to compete with kids in Mississippi and Alabama when they're actually competing with kids in China and India. We must bring our standards up. I've talked about the other things, career education. Why have we stigmatized vocational education? Why have we stigmatized career education? There are kids that don't want to go to Harvard or Yale. They want to fix airplane engines. And it's a good paying job, and it's what God has given them the talent to do. We should be able to graduate kids from high school, not just with a diploma, but with an industry certification and a career like that. And of course, college affordability I touched upon, and adult education is important. Look, all these things matter. I'll conclude by saying that this frustration that's out there is real. From so many people on my side of the aisle, in my party, in the governor's party, I would venture to guess in the party of most of you that are here, a lot of frustration about the outcome of the election. I've heard people say things like, I'm not getting involved anymore. I'm just going to focus on my family and my community and leave politics to others. Others have suggested that maybe the American electorate has changed, that what people want from government now is they're just going to vote for whoever promises them more. I don't believe that's true. I can't believe that's true. Because if it's true, then the very nature of our country has changed forever. And that just can't happen. That cannot happen. I don't believe that's true. I really don't. I think that most people are like my parents. All they want is a job that pays them enough money so they can buy a house, take their kids on a trip every once in a while, do some things that they enjoy in life, and leave their kids better off than themselves. The problem is that those jobs aren't being created as fast as they once were. And too many of them don't have the skills to do the jobs that are being created. That's what they want. And I think that's who we still are as a people. I don't think that's changed. I think what's happened, unfortunately, is that there are those who have made promises to them, who have told them, you know, if we had more government, a bigger government program that does this, or if we allowed us to tax one group of people more so we can pay for services for another group of people, convince people maybe that's the solution to the problems. Here's the truth. Big government doesn't hurt the people doesn't help the people who are trying to make it. It hurts them. Everywhere and every time it's ever been tried, big government crushes the people that are trying to get ahead. The people who have made it, as the president calls them, the millionaires and billionaires and the big corporations, there's nothing wrong with those folks, but they can afford to deal with big government. They may not like it. They can hire the best lawyers in America. They can hire the best accountants. And if they really don't like the law, they can hire the best lobbyists in Washington to change the law. Let me tell you who can't deal with it. The small business owner who's trying to start a business out of the spare bedroom of their home. They can't afford to deal with the cost of complying with big government. Big government crushes people that are trying to make it. That's why throughout the history of the world, 6,000 years of recorded history, almost anyone that has ever lived was poor. Think about what I just said. In 6,000 years of recorded human history, almost every person that has ever lived has been poor and disenfranchised. We Americans, this is the exception, not the rule. What we have here has not been the human condition. And even in many parts of the world today, what we have is rare. And that's important because if America declines, there is nothing to take our place. There is no other country. There is no other organization. There is nothing to be what we are and once were. There is no other country to stand there. What country is going to serve as an inspiration to people all over the world that have been told their whole lives, you can't have freedom because you can't govern a country where people are allowed to express their opinions? Because we express our opinions. What hope is that for people around the world that are told, you can only do the job your father or your mother did because that's your station in life? But they can look to America and see someone just like them that have accomplished extraordinary things. If America declines, if the power of our example is dimmed, what takes its place? The answer is nothing takes its place. And your children and grandchildren will inherit not just a diminished country. They'll inherit a diminished world. Darker and harder, probably more violent than it's been in a long time. What's at stake here is not just our country. It's the way life is on this planet. That's worth fighting for. And what that means to me is that we need to do a better job of going out and convincing our fellow Americans, who perhaps don't see things the way we do, that free enterprise and limited government is the best way forward for them. That free government and limited enterprise and limited government and free enterprise is the only system that has ever allowed people to climb out of the circumstances of their birth. It's the only economic system that's ever allowed a vibrant, widespread middle class to take root. And that's not going to be a hard argument for us to make, but we have to make it. And if we do, then I believe that you will see all across this country what you are seeing here. The ideas that made us an exceptional nation will continue. And our children will inherit what they deserve to inherit, what I inherited and you inherited, the single greatest nation in the history of all of mankind. And I'm just grateful that you gave me an opportunity to share this with you today. I haven't had a chance to speak other than in my home after the election. And and even that's been limited. But I'm grateful that you gave me the opportunity to address you on these topics today, because I feel so passionately that what's at stake here is truly generational. I don't see this just as a challenge. I see it as an extraordinary opportunity. As an opportunity for us as a generation of Americans to do our part and write our pages in the extraordinary history of this special place. Oftentimes people come to me all the time and say, thank you for what you're doing for our country. I feel guilty when you say that to me, because I want you to know that I can never do for this country what it has done for me. I don't know where I would be tonight if my parents had not come to America in 1956, but I doubt very seriously whether I would be in a place like this, speaking to a crowd like you. Perhaps I would be just like all people have been throughout 6,000 years of history. I would be doing like what my father did. And there's nothing wrong with being a bartender at a banquet. But he did that so I could have the career, whatever it was, never pushed me into one career or another. And I believe there are millions of people that still want that for their children and grandchildren here in America. And our job is to make it easier for them to do that. And government can play a role in making that happen. Governor Branstad is an example of what government can do to help the middle class grow and a state be prosperous. And I pray God will give me the opportunity to be part of that as well in Washington, D.C. So thank you for the chance to speak to you on these topics. Now.